Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Under circumstances less than auspicious. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. Available across the interweb tubes in a variety of formats and platforms. Easiest, simply by going to headonradionetwork.com and clicking Listen Live. Although there are podcasts available at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this program, if you can't listen live, and we more than understand if you can't. It's one of the glories of new media is that you're not locked into what somebody else says about when something should be broadcast. Kind of neat, huh? You can also get the podcasts over at iTunes. We're available on TuneIn Radio, Tuner Internet Radio app, Stitcher.com, Streama.com, Dar.fm, Roku devices, and a number of others. We are listener supported. It takes listener contributions to help keep all of this going. We try to raise $150 a night. There's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, also there under the tab contribute is the snail mail address. If you look, you'll note this is the 17th of December, and even if we're operating on the old $2,500 goal, you will find that we are in a hole to the tune of about $175. That's on the old $2,500 goal. And that would be, we would be in a $175 hole 2 days ago. So that gives you an idea where we are as far as trying to make sure that we have this next month, too. I will announce a challenge this evening. Our buddy Randy in Pennsylvania said, I'm in the holiday spirit. I'm putting out my own $50 horn matching challenge for any one live broadcast night between Monday, 17 December, and Thursday, 20th December. Good until the following night's broadcast time. So, thank you very much, Randy. So, Randy will match the first $50 that come in this evening. And that is greatly appreciated. And will help get us a little closer to that halfway mark that passed a couple of days ago. Yeah, these are some pretty broad pauses. I was on the road, you know, I wasn't here Friday evening. I was on the road to Knoxville. I had been invited down there to speak to some students. They were getting ready to have their December commencement ceremonies. And an honorary degree was being awarded to one Charles Holliday, former CEO of DuPont, I believe, but president of the board of Bank of America. And he has written a book talking about corporate sustainability and the necessity for sustainability in corporate culture, and yet is the president of the board of Bank of America. Our friends at Rainforest Action Network organize that, and they do very good work. And so we were the hope was to draw his attention to the fact that Bank of America is still financing mountaintop removal and still financing coal, and that if they're going to have a board of directors chairman who ballyhoos sustainability, getting out of the coal business would be a great way to put some real heft, some real muscle behind the words. So that's what I was doing. Ferg went with me. And so we were in the car as the horrible, horrible details of what had taken place up in Connecticut began to unfold. And of course, like you, most of us, Americans at least, and I suspect people the world over looking at the United States, the first thought is, oh no, not again. Please, not again. Because it had only been a couple of days since this happened in Clackamas, Oregon. And we have this deadly string of this horrific, terrifying string of hells on earth. And that's always what it is. Oh, no. Not again. I have a little clip here that sort of reinforces the oh, no, not again factor. It goes back to 1999. Sandra sent this along. Just listen.
I want to begin by saying that Hillary and I are profoundly shocked and saddened by the tragedy today in Littleton.
Our nation is shocked and saddened by the news of the shootings at Virginia Tech today.
This afternoon I spoke with Governor Malloy and FBI Director Mueller.
I've spoken with Governor Tim Kaine and Virginia Tech President Charles Steger.
I have spoken with Governor Bill Owens and County Commission Chair Patricia Holloway.
And made it clear he will have every single resource that he needs to investigate this heinous crime, care for the victims, counsel their families.
To stand ready to assist local law enforcement, the schools, the families, the entire community during this time of crisis and sorrow.
Stand ready to help local law enforcement and the local community in any way we can during this time of sorrow.
We've endured too many of these tragedies in the past few years.
I know the other communities that have been through this are also ready to do whatever they can to help.
The exact toll has not yet been confirmed.
We don't know yet all the hows or whys of this tragedy.
And each time I learn the news, I react not as a president, but as anybody else would.
Schools should be places of safety and sanctuary and learning.
We must do more to reach out to our children and teach them to express their anger, and to resolve their conflicts with words, not weapons.
They had their entire lives ahead of them. Birthdays, graduations, weddings, kids of their own.
The impact is felt in every American classroom and every American community.
Whether it's an elementary school in Newton or a shopping mall in Oregon or a temple in Wisconsin or a movie theater in Aurora or a street corner in Chicago, these neighborhoods are our neighborhoods and these children are our children.
Perhaps now America would wake up to the dimensions of this challenge if it could happen in a place like Littleton, and we could prevent anything like this from happening again.
And we're going to have to come together and take meaningful action to prevent more tragedies like this, regardless of the politics.
Today, our nation grieves with those who have lost loved ones at Virginia Tech.
Our hearts are broken today for the parents and grandparents, sisters and brothers of these little children, and for the families of the adults who were lost.
We hold the victims in our hearts. We lift them up in our prayers. And we ask a loving God to comfort those who are suffering today.
May God bless the memory of the victims. And in the words of Scripture, heal the brokenhearted and bind up their wounds.
To the people of the community of Littleton, I can only say tonight that the prayers of the American people are with you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. If you want to look that up for later reference, it's on YouTube. It is called The Three Speeches. And they're kind of all the same speech, aren't they? Or so they certainly seem. I saw something Michael Moore tweeted in the last day or so. He said, I said all I had to say about guns 10 years ago, and nothing has changed. And I felt like I was reading, I felt like he had tweeted what I was thinking. What more is there to say? We grieve for a different set of parents, brothers, sisters. There is a different set of horrifying final moment facts, like the little girl who was the survivor of her classroom who said, "Mommy, I'm alive, but all my friends are dead." It just gets harder and harder. And Friday, when it was becoming obvious what had happened, I thought, I wish I wasn't on the road. I wish I was behind the microphone. But on further and perhaps more mature reflection, I realized perhaps it was good not to be. that perhaps this kind of grief has to be worked through like death itself, alone. But a couple of days have passed now, and it's no less raw. We have been repeatedly admonished via various social media that it is wrong to try to talk about politics or policy or solutions before the bodies are buried. But I don't quite think that true. Because if 20 children were killed by a bad lot of tomato soup with botulism in it, we would not wait until after the funeral to begin recalling the tomato soup, lest more die. Not at all. What appeared to be behind those words, or those admonitions, is something along the lines of, please don't start talking about firearms, because the firearms people in this country know that most people are sick and tired of sacrificing our children for their fetish. And I use the word fetish specifically. I do not use the word fetish to suggest that anyone is masturbating over their firearms. I use the word fetish in its specific and socio-scientific meaning. I use it to suggest the cult status that attaches to firearms. I have already been told on my Facebook page that firearms are the means by which freedom is preserved, and I am so sick of that as to be nigh puking. No freedom has ever been granted by a firearm, protected by a firearm, preserved by a firearm. Freedom is a concept, a construct, if you will, within the human psyche, or spirit, for those who prefer the more mystical approach. It is not the province of weapons makers. In fact, I think there may be something to be said, if we want to take the long view, about that mythos, our national origin myth, that itself leads down a dim hallway, a dark hallway, a hallway with sticky, congealing blood on the floors to where we are now. Because from the first moment that white Europeans arrived here, the way has been paved in blood. You may recall on Thursday, we were talking about, and it seems so far away now, doesn't it? talking about how Grover Norquist, white man, said he was going to put Barack Obama on a leash. And we remember where the leash traditionally goes, around the neck, just like nooses do. And we know that millions were kidnapped to support the very first agricultural economy of this land after it had been taken away from the people who occupied it more successfully than people have ever occupied any land anywhere on the planet. And we know that a genocide was practiced against those people from whom the land was taken. On the way home Saturday morning, Ferg and I took a little drive off the beaten path down into Sevierville, Tennessee. Didn't have time to go all the way to the Smokies, but you get your first really good view of the Smoky Mountains topping a hill in Sevierville. And they are magnificent. They are different than these mountains here. They look a little more like the Alpine massifs, the Himalayan towers that they once were millions of years ago. And you can't look at that land without remembering that that was very successfully cultivated and occupied land before the first white fella ever showed up. And so we remember that everything about the rise of this country has at one point or another been bathed in blood. And that maybe that's, maybe, and of course that is our national origin myth. The shot heard round the world. That's the way we characterize the resistance of colonists to the British Army at Lexington and Concord and Breed's Hill. Was it Yitzhak Rabin who was murdered by his own people in Israel who said that human history is writ in blood and we badly need to find another color? This is... Well, I'm sorry. I should be doing better radio, but I'm truly at a loss. How do we point towards solutions? If we point, for instance, to Europe, which has much more enlightened and sane laws regarding firearms, we are reminded, of course, that the Swiss have lots of guns. The Austrians have lots of guns. But there are limitations. and licensing requirements. This, meanwhile, is a country in which trying to pass a law that says one may purchase only one firearm per month is a creeping attack on the freedoms of our Second Amendment. And the next thing you know, the black helicopters will be a-flying over our house, and they'll be coming to pry our guns from our cold, dead fingers. I have lost the ability to be at all rational about these people who claim that they're protecting freedom by keeping a house full of guns in case somebody comes to try to steal their four-wheeler. No patience left. If you follow that, you know, we are constantly yeah, but you can't punish lawful gun owners. You know what? If you own a Bushmaster or any other of these civilianized military-style weapons, you've got murder in your heart somewhere. No one is ever going to say take everybody's guns away. We would probably be dramatically better off, but nobody's going to say that. A lot of things have, however, been said. Bless his old, incredibly old heart, Bob Schieffer, doing some hand-wringing on Meet the Nation or Face George Snuffleupagus or whatever the CBS program is, said, if the shooter had been an Arab, we would be in a war frenzy, or words to that effect. And he is right. David in South Carolina pointing out the same thing by email. If most or all these mass murder shooters had been named Muhammad or had been men of color rather than upper middle class intelligent but disturbed white men, the USA would probably be on a terror alert, rounding up men of color across the USA, making felony traffic stops of black men for no reason, even more than usual. Infiltrating mosques and fox heads would be breathless in the throes of multiple paroxysms, and David in South Carolina is absolutely correct. A lot of people have said a lot of things. Oddly enough, those of us who are progressive were quickly warned that we must be careful what we say because this is not the right time. Apparently, the right wingers didn't get the memo. None of them got the memo. From Mike Huckstaby, who said the following.
Christian-owned businesses are told to surrender their values under the edict of government orders to provide tax-funded abortion pills. We carefully and intentionally stop saying things are sinful, and we call them disorders. Sometimes we even say they're normal. And to get to where that we have to abandon bedrock moral truths, then we are asked, well, where was God? And I respond that as I see it, we've escorted him right out of our culture and we've marched him off the public square. And then we express our surprise that a culture without him actually reflects what it's become.
It is time for Mike Huckstaby to have an entire nation spit on his shoes. He's channeling something so filthy that nobody who... Who's God, Mike? Which God? Never mind the fact that since he is a Christian, he is necessarily lying, because there's not even any such thing as a government-funded abortion pill. But Jesus Christ, if you go and read the comments, I'd read some over at Washington Post about something. Well, maybe we wouldn't have this if it wasn't 1.2 million abortions from crazed abortion doctors. No, Mike Huckabee didn't get the memo about affording a decent passage of time. If only we'd all get back into the religion industry with him and help enrich him and his religion industry cronies, then are they willing to... I mean, do we get a guarantee? Is there any warranty on this? You see, they're not having... There haven't been 31 of these mass murder school shootings in Europe. The gun goobers ran right out after this horror transpired and pointed to a story from China in which a man went after some school children and 20 people were injured by a man with a knife. The operative word, of course, is injured. They have lived to tell the tale. But we... See, that's because the man in China couldn't take advantage of... What did the right-wing teabagger call it? Second Amendment remedies? Yeah. Tim Wildman, son of Donald Wildman, also didn't get the memo that we progressives and liberals received.
I believe that Satan himself went into the body and soul of that 20-year-old, drove to the school, and massacred those kindergartners. That doesn't exonerate the person for their responsibility. But this to me, it's the only way.
Tim, he doesn't have any responsibility. He's dead. You got that? And see, because Satan is such a power on this earth, there's really nothing to be done about any of this. We don't need to do anything at all unless, of course, we're going to get back to God. Because, you know, Satan can just possess a 20-year-old and he only apparently possesses 20-year-olds who have mothers who believe that the end times are upon us and therefore stockpile military-style assault weapons. He's crafty, that Satan. But we can't. We just have to live with it. Satan seems a lot more interested in us than other so-called civilized nations, though, which, to my mind, calls into question whether or not we are, in fact, civilized. But do, Tim Wildman, tell us more.
You can explain this, because if you had someone who was angry at their mother, and they were out of control, and they got a gun... You could see how, and they were someone given maybe to rage. You could see how something like this domestic act where he murdered his mama could happen.
Domestic violence, terrible as it is, does happen.
Maybe
every day.
A moment.
Yeah, see, we just excuse it. Domestic violence, as terrible as it is, it does happen. Again, by all means, let's not try to do anything to reduce it. Because, you know, it does happen. Even though this is a God show, and they worship an all-powerful, omnipotent ruler of the universe who has, because he's omnipotent, the power to make it not happen, right? Or else he's so feckless that he just sits there and giggles while it does. But it does happen. You know, sometimes kids do blow away their mamas, but I mean, that's where it should end.
Moment of rage.
It happens in America every day.
We
have some framework for that.
Yes. Okay.
Now. We have some framework for that. Now, these boys are Republicans, of course, and it is worth noting, as I pointed out, that Eric Cantor is going hammer and tongs trying to defeat the Violence Against Women Act. We talked about this on the show because it has a portion to it that allows prosecution of non-tribal persons by tribal authorities when they commit domestic violence against tribal members. And I haven't heard anything about American Family Radio calling for Eric Cantor to change his ways and try to and hurry on through and reauthorize the Violence Against Women Act. Nope, sorry. Well, no, I mean, we've got a framework for that, right?
Now, here's what I mean by it's satanic, is when you go from there to getting the guns, getting into your car, driving to what you know is an elementary...
Wait, what?
Elementary school.
Oh, it became satanic when a driver's license was involved? Can we please remember that Mother Lanza taught her child to shoot? That they went to the range? That they enjoyed target practice? Oh, son, you gotta adjust for the windage there a little bit at 150 yards. Oh, you gotta lead 'em, son.
Breaking in and start murdering innocent kindergartners. You knew what you knew where you were going. Mm-hmm. You knew what you were doing. You were
No, he didn't. You just said he was possessed by Satan. Now, either satanic possession is satanic possession, or the guy is just gone with guns. Because you see, what this is a desperate attempt, a groping, pathetic attempt to explain something to people who tune into American Family Radio really meaning to, without pointing to root causations. Without talking about things like the 200, 300, 400... Wait a minute. Let's see. Fall of Tenochtitlan, 1520. Yeah, nearly 500 years. Of cultural imposition by way of bloodshed. Can you... Well, Ron and Raleigh used to be... Well, still is particularly good at saying, no, I can't imagine that happening on Rush Limbaugh. Because you can't talk about something like this to a Limbaugh listener or a devoted listener to American Family Radio. Because... pretty quick, their brains go, nee. It's the la-la switch. La-la-la-la-la-la, not listening. Right? So let's back up. Apparently Satan has a driver's license, because we can understand him blowing his mama away. Well, let's go back.
Okay, now, here's what I mean by it's satanic. Is when you go from there to getting the guns, getting into your car, driving to what you know is an elementary school, breaking in and start murdering innocent kindergartners. You knew what you were. You knew where you were going. Mm-hmm. You knew what you were doing. You weren't going any. You were Satan. Went into this person and did these evil things through him. I believe that. I'm not speaking for anybody else. He may have had a mental disorder. I'm not discounting that at all. Sure he did.
He's not discounting it except for the fact that he just discounted it.
Yeah, that seems certain.
But I'm saying that to someone to consciously do such an evil, heinous act had to come from Satan.
No, he came from his mother's home where she was stockpiling weapons for the zombie apocalypse. That's where he came from. The problem is, if there was no Satan, and I'm pretty sure there's not, we have a certain element in this country that would create him anyway. But, I mean, the message did not, the right wing really, really did not get the memo. Brian Fisher, also of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, did not get the memo.
You know, the question is going to come up, well, where was God? I thought God cared about the little children. God protected the little children. Where was God when all this went down? And here's the bottom line.
You know, before Brian Fisher gives us the bottom line, may I suggest to the reading members of the audience, and the Horn family, we're big on reading. I know Brian Fisher's not. Elie Wiesel wrote a book. Is it called Night? And he talks about that moment when he came to understand that there was no God. That God didn't exist. I would suggest that for anyone trying to sort out theistic questions within the framework of Newtown, Connecticut, and Sandy Hook Elementary. There was even one Christian who Facebooked that 20 little children were going to get the best Christmas present ever because they were going to be with our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Which is kind of the opposite of what Tim Wildman was saying there. Because he said it was a satanic killing. This Christian, on the other hand, said that it was a matter of, that this was a blessing. So I guess what we can say is that while there is no there's no way to understand from the mouth of the killer why this happened, we can learn a lot about this country by listening to the gun apologists. Every one of these people whom I have played for you has been an alleged follower of Jesus Christ. And not one of them has cited that very simple verse, Peter, put up thy sword. Not one. And you're not going to get it from Brian Fisher, neither.
God is not going to go where he's not wanted. Now, we have spent since 1962, we're 50 years into this now, we have spent 50 years telling God to get lost.
And, wait, stop. You mean we pissant mortals can do that? We can tell the most powerful, omnipotent creator of the universe to get lost, and he'll kick the dust with his feet and look kind of hurt, and we'll hear the minor key strings in the background as he turns away like a child that no one wants to play with on the playground, and he'll just go away? Dang. That's some omnipotent God.
Telling God we do not want you in our schools. We don't want to pray to you in our schools. We don't want to pray to you before football games. We don't want to pray to you at graduation. We don't want anybody talking about you in a graduation speech. We don't want anybody
Question, what would this monologue be if the guy had been shouting Bible verses the whole time? Lanza. Yeah, see, that's how you know that this is right.
Referring to you, we don't want your word read in our schools. So in 1962, we kicked prayer out of the schools. In 1963, we kicked the word of God out of schools.
Which is not true. Anybody who, and I've said it before, I'll say it again, anybody who thinks that there's no prayer in schools has never seen an unprepared ninth grader in front of an Algebra 1 exam, because there is lots of praying going on. Jesus, please just help me. Help me remember the line slope equation. Please, Jesus. What, Jesus? Y equals MX plus B. Thank you, Jesus. And then it turns out there's only two questions on the test about the line slope formula. And then once you get into the, why didn't you hand me the quadratic equation, Jesus? There's lots of praying in schools. What these goons are talking about, however, is wanting people to pray their prayer to their God. Again, this is a theorem that may be tested and therefore becomes more valid. For instance, if you tell Brian Fisher that we're going to have prayer in schools and it's going to be a Muslim prayer and every kid's going to get a rug and they're all going to face Mecca about three times during any given school day, suddenly Brian Fisher will not want prayer in schools. But you see, this is, well, like I said, they didn't get the memo us progressives got.
1980, we kicked the Ten Commandments out of schools. We've kicked God out of our public school system. And I think God would say to us,
like God's old yeller or something, right? Go on, get!
Hey, I'll be glad to protect your children, but you got to invite me back into your world first. I'm not going to go where I'm not wanted. I am a gentleman.
God is a gentleman. He opens the doors for the ladies and lights the cigarettes. He's a gentleman.
I think back when I was in elementary school, we had
not that it did any good
prayer in schools, and we didn't need guns. I'm going to repeat that. Back when we had prayer, the Bible, and the Ten Commandments in schools, we did not need guns. So,
I'm just going to observe this based on what I can see of the video. I'm guessing back when Brian Fisher was in school, guns weren't the only thing they didn't have in school. Yeah. Right. At least he hadn't gotten around to blaming the homosexuals yet.
I'm going to suggest to you is the ultimate solution here is not the Second Amendment, but the First Amendment that guarantees, protects the free exercise of religion. It's time to get a little bit of that free exercise of religion back into our public schools. And maybe it's time for some school boards and administrators to say, look, we don't care. The lives of our children are just too important to us. We are going to pray in our schools. At the beginning of the day, we're going to pray for protection. And I don't care what the Supreme Court says. I don't care what anybody says. Our children are too important to us to leave them vulnerable without asking God for his help and for his protection.
So, to understand that a little bit better, Sandy Hook Elementary is not that far from Saint Somebody of Somewhere Church, because I've seen it referred to in the news stories. It wasn't enough that these families went to church. They have to also pray before school starts? Do they also need to pray at lunch? Do they need to pray before they get on the bus? How much praying needs to go on in these schools in order for this apparently arbitrary, bloodthirsty, brutal God of Brian Fisher's to deign to step in? What kind of God says, nope, I'm going to take it out on the kids? The adults threw prayer out, and I'm going to take it out on the kids. Add Brian Fisher to the list of people who badly need civilized human beings to begin spitting on his shoes. Isn't it interesting how they all have these solutions, and every one of these solutions inures to their benefit by adding to their power base? We ain't done. There aren't that many of we progressive broadcasters out there, and I'm way down on the totem pole, and I'm okay with that. We have a little community we've built here, and it's mighty special. But there aren't even that. You can count the top tier of progressive broadcasters on one hand. And I have no doubt that practically everyone, every progressive broadcaster out there has had some kind of a different understanding of what happened this past Friday in Connecticut. Oddly enough, however, the right wing seem all to have the same answer. Now we'll take you to Dr. James Dobson.
Our country really does seem in complete disarray.
Yes.
I'm not talking politically. I'm not talking about the result of the November 6th election. I am saying that something has gone wrong mm-hmm. in America. Mm-hmm. And that we have turned our back on God. I mean, millions of people have decided that either God doesn't exist or he's irrelevant to me. And we have killed 54 million babies. And the institution of marriage is right on the verge of a complete redefinition.
You just knew somebody getting work their way around to getting gay marriage into this, didn't you? And you really want when it comes to that kind of sickness, you really want to go to the mountain of sickness. To get it, and there's no better sicko than Dr. James Dobson, right?
Believe me, that is going to have consequences too, and a lot of these things are happening around us, and somebody's going to get mad at me for saying what I'm about to say right now, but I'm going to give you my honest opinion. I think we have turned our back on the Scripture and on God Almighty, and I think he has allowed judgment to fall upon us.
Time to spit on his shoes, too. Why would anyone, worship a God that takes out his petty jealousies on six-year-olds? Why? Because that's what he says. I think we have turned our back on the Scripture and on God Almighty, and I think he has allowed judgment to fall upon us. Whose judgment? God's judgment. Or is there another God named judgment? This is James Dobson. Please remember. This is James Dobson, who has offered prolifically his advice on the proper raising of children. Because he's an Ed D. Doctor child psychologist. And he says, to anyone willing to listen, that if you want to have a good child, don't trust me, go read it for yourself in his books if you can stomach them. He says that if you want to have a good child, the trick with that is when they're about the same age as the children who were murdered in Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, you need to beat them until they cry real tears. Really. That James Dobson. He also says that men who want to keep their sons from catching a nasty case of the gay need to take their sons when they're roughly the same age as the children who were massacred at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, naked with them into their showers, and the fathers need to show their children, little boys, not little girls, they need to show their little boys, with the little boys at roughly eye level, their penises. That is the child-raising advice of a man who says that God delivered judgment onto innocent six-year-olds, first graders, because we older folks aren't spending enough time reading in there about how we're not supposed to eat shellfish or wear clothing of mixed fibers. In many of us, these horrors at least bring out the decency of human grief and sympathy. But in these religious people, it brings out the absolute worst. It's kind of interesting trying to sort that one out, too, isn't it? Catch up with the mailbag real quick. David in South Carolina noting, no, Mike Huxterby, people did not take God out of Sandy Hook Elementary School. I'm surprised that you, being a preacher and all that, were not aware of just how God works. You see, Mr. Huxterby, man does not move God around as if God was a game board piece on your board game, because if you would read and study that book called the Bible, you would find that God is omnipotent, all-powerful, and if these words are too big for your wee little mind to comprehend, they mean that God is in control and it is God who moves people around and not the other way around. Therefore, it is impossible for a mere mortal to move God anywhere. The problem at Sandy Hook Elementary, Mr. Huxterby, is not that someone moved God out of Sandy Hook. It is that someone moved some loaded, lethal automatic weapons into Sandy Hook Elementary School and slaughtered 20 precious children and 6 precious adults. This is what happened here, Mr. Huxterby. I suggest that you read your Bible or maybe do some theological research before you open your mouth. Thank you. Amen. Ray pointing out, you know, it was never the right time to talk about the Iraq War either. True, true. Kate said, blah, blah, why aren't we sick and saddened by the U.S. drone attacks on kids abroad? Maybe because they're brown? I'm tired of the disaster porn. It's all over the world media, on satellite radio. There's no way the gun laws are going to change. We will keep crying and wringing our hands. This clip, the one I played at the beginning, makes me want to throw up in the back of my throat. Yeah, it's sort of a firearms groundhog day, isn't it? Rise and shine, campers! Rise and shine. Ray just asking, my God, there have been 31 school shootings? My God, how many are enough? Michael pointing out, well, some of them weren't schools, some of them were movie theaters, you know. Michael pointing out, so by Huckstery's logic, his God does not preside over Europe, or God just doesn't care about European abortions enough to punish them on a regular basis? See how it works? Our buddy Horst pointing out rape and murder have been happening since the beginning of history. Let's just make it legal. Oh, and by the way, that reminds me, thank you very much, Horst, the Right Honorable Justice Antonin Scalia, son of the head of the pro-Mussolini organization in the United States back in the day, does not get a pass on this one either. You'll recall he was taken to task and justified his comments recently by querying whether the people get to define what they don't like, whether it be murder or homosexuality. He equated murder and homosexuality. He needs some loogies on his shoes, too. Because, I really wish, I mean, if there's a deity out there, it seems like more and more we are being reminded that this deity, sometimes we laugh that God is a God of irony. Not this time. It was a week or so ago that my senator, Joe Manchin, was fulminating about a TV show about the West Virginia kids getting drunk and driving their four-wheelers and going swimming in dump trucks. A few days later, a gas pipeline exploded in the same community and sent a wall of fire 400 feet high across an interstate highway and melted the damn road. That was a little reality check for Senator Joe. More on Senator Joe later. Antonin Scalia fulminates about homosexuality being as subject as murder to being criminalized by the populace. Yeah, you know. Michael also pointing out, so the First Amendment, specifically the religion industry crutch part, is the ultimate solution, going back to Brian Fisher. From the verbiage, can I take it to mean that this solution will be final? Absolutely. Marty with a query says, and the question about James Dobson's comment about beating kids until they cry real tears, how does one tell real tears from fake ones? Marty says, I always meant to ask him that one. He ain't important enough for me to ask, but, you know. Well, see, Jesus gives you the ability to discern real tears from fake ones. Maybe the fake tears are the ones that mingle with blood, or the real tears. Fake tears just fall down your face. But when you're really into beat good, South Carolina pointing out that Sam Cedar and Tom Hartman briefly touched on it today, that the first victim on Friday was a gun owner. All these idiots yelling about, well, if a teacher had a gun, they're fools. Lib says, I was working access point in a small tent to a top secret command HQ in Saudi Arabia close to the Iraqi border in 1991. I had a loaded M16 when I confronted a deranged Army Sergeant Major. My partner and I had no chance of detaining him, or anything else. It happened too quickly, although my partner, a real MP, did detain and disarm him a few minutes later. If he wanted, that sick sergeant major could have easily walked into the tent and killed both of us armed soldiers, then continued into the secure area of the camp. Sigh. I read today about two cops who were armed, were murdered today or yesterday. Having a gun doesn't protect you from shit. Not your family, not from the cops, not from people who mean you harm. Everybody remembers the concealed carry guy in Arizona who almost blew away a hero after getting a gun from the nut. Also, the Bushmaster AR-15, guess what the AR stands for? Army rifle! This is not a kill Bambi. It's a kill people weapon. Hug you kids. Darlene says, sure, no surprise here. Let me see if I've got this straight. We've gone from the Devil Wears Prada to the Devil Wears Bushmaster, Glock, and Sig Sauer. Couldn't stomach looking at the Facebook news feed, trying to avoid all the idiotic and ignorant things people tend to say. Can't stomach the repigs either, but that's nothing new. Come on, Bob, we all knew the right-wingers, both politicians and religious, would be saying these incredibly demented things. They're crazy, plain and simple. The only good news I've seen is the possibility that Anonymous might be going after those freaks of the Westboro Baptist Church, assuming the news story is true. I guess they're planning to come to Newtown to pick at the funerals. Again, these people are sick, indicative of an incredibly sick culture that comprises the good old U.S. of A. Can't wait for the Westboro Baptist crazies to meet the Connecticut State Police. You know how bizarre it is? You know who announced that they were going to counter-protest the Westboro Baptist Church? The Klan. The Klan. That's how bad the Westboro Baptist Church have gotten. The Klan wants to counter-protest them because Westboro is just too disgusting for the Klan. Now, that's in no wise an endorsement of the Klan or praise of the Klan, but merely pointing out that on sliding scales, well, you know. Sorry about the downtime there for a minute. I didn't notice that we had buffered up. One of these days we'll have a producer. Marty saying, sorry, Bob, I have more respect for my spit than to use it on their shoes. I prefer merely to show them my back. You know, the Klingon discommodation scene from Star Trek The Next Generation. Then this, coming in from Sandra. Oh, my God. Please read this quote from this libertarian idiot writing at Newsweek. Her solution to stopping mass murder in America? I'd also like to encourage people to gang rush shooters rather than following their instincts to hide. If we drilled it into young people... Really? Really? You're going to write, drilled it into young people? If we drilled it into young people that the correct thing to do is for everyone to instantly run at the guy with the gun, these sorts of mass shootings would be less deadly, because even a guy with a very powerful weapon can be brought down by 8 to 12 unarmed bodies piling on him at once. So let's go ahead and live with this sick, blood-sodden culture that we have, but let's rush the shooters. What? Yeah. Brother. Like I said, there's more. My senator made news today. My senator, Joe Manchin, who couldn't lead a group of Cub Scouts in a chorus of Kumbaya. He's that much of a non-leader. But he showed up on Morning Joe, I guess it was. And in the main, I think it's because of the word that went out. People on two of the different Sunday talk shows, the booking people that bring the guests in, the ones that are forever calling John McCain to come in and share with us his abiding wisdom. The bookers said they called 31 different pro-gun members of Congress, and none of them were willing to come in and talk about solutions on the Sunday shows. Joe Manchin's office said, nobody called us! We like guns! So lo and behold, the big scoop was had by MSNBC this morning. When they got Joe Manchin to come on and talk about the problem. And a lot of people saw this and went, ooh, but a lot of people don't know Joe Manchin.
I've been a hunter all my life. The culture in West Virginia is hunting and sporting, and we love it. It's part of who we are. But we're taught at a very young age how to do it responsibly and respect the weapons and learn to use them safely for the purpose of hunting and sporting. With that being said, I've never been hunting with anyone with an assault weapon. I've never been hunting with anyone with multiple clips of 10, 15, 20, or 30 rounds.
You don't hunt with the right people, Joe. I remember, God, it was a long time ago now. Probably 18 years. Getting up in the wee small hours of the morning. Monday before Thanksgiving. Just a nice bright nip in the air. Heading out into the country to some property that was owned by my buddies, friends. Walking out into the fields, checking the lay of the land as the sunlight broke over the horizon. You know, we'd already started sneaking. We didn't want to stumble up anything. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you hear ring of somebody just going hell bent for leather on his four wheeler. And then you hear it go to idle. And then you hear blam, 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 blam. Damn it. Well, that was Daryl. And Daryl had, I think he was hunting that day with a Remington semi-automatic hunting 30-06, or maybe he was hunting with one of those easily accessible at the time AK-47s with a nice little banana clip in it. But he squeezed off 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 rounds before, yeah, and my buddy looked at me and said, well, I guess we need to go find another place. We're screwed. There won't be a deer around here for the next 3 days. Blam, 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 blam. That kind of goes to show you that Joe hunts with a 1% deer hunting crowd, too. But then again, Joe's got no place to talk about responsible handling of firearms. See, since I know Joe, I know what he's done in his campaign ads. You might recall, if you're a longtime listener to this program, as a matter of fact, you might recall that Joe campaigned for Senate by taking out a bolt-action, not a semi-automatic to his credit, a bolt-action deer rifle, way too much gun, and shooting a piece of paper against a tree that was marked Cap and Trade Bill. You might recall this election season, because I know I talked about this just a couple of months ago, that he was seen in another campaign commercial holding a firearm and saying, "No, I know what y'all think, but I don't have to do that this time. I already killed Cap and Trade." Killed Cap and Trade. Killed! So, bless their hearts. While folks like Think Progress put up posts that say things like, "Watch top NRA-sponsored lawmaker explain why we don't need high-capacity clips." Well, that's what happens when you don't have context. And you know, them conservatives, they love them some context, unless it's being, you know, used to, well, you get the idea. Because Joe just got himself elected. He's got 6 years before he has to look at Wayne LaPierre and ask him how shiny he wants to lick up his boots.
The culture in West Virginia is hunting and sporting, and we love it. It's part of who we are. But we're taught at a very young age how to do it responsibly.
We're taught at a very young age how to do it responsibly. That's why we have things in West Virginia called road hunters. It is, suffice to say, illegal. But we have these guys called road hunters, and they generally like to use a short-barreled firearm, like, say, a little 30-30 carbine. And they'll take a spotlight at night, and they'll shine it into a field, and they'll just blow away deer in the field for the fun of, well, like Johnny Cash said, just to watch them die. We got lots of road hunters in West Virginia. Just ask any Department of Natural Resources officer.
To use them safely for the purpose of hunting and sporting. With that being said, I've never been hunting with anyone with an assault weapon. I've never been hunting with anyone with multiple clips of 10, 15, 20, or 30 rounds in it. You know, in deer hunting, we maybe have three shells in our gun, and that's the sport.
And that's two more shells than you needed, Joe Manchin, to kill a cap and trade bill. Ain't it, Deadeye?
Of what we do, and I just think that when you have Chuck Schumer, my friend Chuck Schumer, basically saying that we should look at these larger clips and multiple, those are something we should be talking about. And when you have Joe Lieberman, just the most decent human being, saying that, listen, we need to have, this is bigger. It's about mental illness. It's about keeping our children safe in our schools. You know, one of the five promises we should all keep to children, and one of the basic promises, every child should have a safe place. And sometimes it might not always be the home. But it's always usually been a school. And now that's even taken off.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Agreed here, Senator. The NRA themselves have been relatively quiet on the issue. There were reports today they've deactivated their Facebook page. Have they spoken to you, and what do you think their response would be to a Feinstein bill if it got broad support?
Well, you know, and where the NRA would come from, and I have reached out and spoken to them, and I intend to do an awful lot more. I want them engaged in this dialogue.
When he says reached out and spoken to them, that means he sent them a very nice thank you letter for the check.
These are good people. And
see, you know it's a failed effort right there when Joe Manchin says the NRA leadership are good people. They're not. There is nothing good about Wayne LaPierre. Texas Betsy pointing out along the way, she says, by the way, how safe is the school with 40 kids in a class and teachers constantly worried about their jobs? There's that. And as Faith pointed out on her on Facebook earlier today, so teachers are supposed to meet standardized test expectations, maintain order in an overcrowded classroom, and rush the gunman, or perhaps be armed. See, that rushing the gunman part comes easy, because most of the teachers I know are like that. But there are right-wing goobers out there, Louis Gohmert, right to the front of the pack. I mean, he didn't get the memo either about allowing time for grief. He didn't get the memo either because he run, oh, daggummit, I'm just sorry. The teacher didn't have, the principal didn't have no rifle gun. None of this would have happened if she would have took dead aim and took him out. Betsy says, yeah, most teachers I know would defend their students from bullets. But, you know, we're only in it for the pension. But no, there's nothing good about Wayne LaPierre. I mean, I don't care how many pictures you show me of Wayne LaPierre petting a dog or scratching a cat behind the ears. That's not going to make him a good person because he is bathed. He is awash in innocent blood over the years. It was possible for Mother Lanza to have thousands of rounds of ammunition in her home because the NRA insisted upon a law that created the internet sale of ammunition. You know, it's fun to buy stuff on the internet. And, you know, if you want to buy 1,000 tennis rackets, there's no need for a one tennis racket per month waiting period. But thousands of rounds of ammunition? No, there are little clues here, including Joe's kind words for Joe Lieberman, that tell you that this is just low rent brown nosing by a relatively junior senator. See, Joe still thinks he's made of presidential timber. He's past, you know, having any shot, but, you know, it's one of those, you know, I could have been a contender kind of things.
Been to school, and now that's even taken off.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Agreed here.
Do you know how many times Joe Manchin, as governor of West Virginia, stiffed school teachers here? Yeah, lots. Lots. Of course, this is the same Joe Manchin who can't be bothered to acknowledge the science that says that babies are being poisoned in the womb in his own state by his pals in the coal industry. So it's really hard to take Joe seriously if you actually, you know, if you know Joe.
Senator, the NRA themselves have been relatively quiet on the issue. There were reports today they deactivated their Facebook page. Had they spoken to you, and what do you think their response would be to a Feinstein bill if it got broad support?
Well, you know, and where the NRA would come from, and I have reached out and spoken to them, and I intend to do an awful lot more. I want them engaged in this dialogue. These are good people, and they need to be at the table. And bottom line is what we're asking is for all of us to come together and see a reasonable approach that we can take. And we're still protecting the Second Amendment rights. That's their concern, and my concern also. And again, they don't need to be villainized, nor should they be. They're going to be a strong participant, and they should be at the table, and I'm going to do everything I can to make sure they are.
Well, Senator,
And there is the real answer. He didn't come out, but he didn't come out to say that we need to get rid of the banana clips or drums. He came out to make sure that everybody understood that in any discussion of these ongoing horrors, the people who have helped facilitate the horrors are going to have a seat at the table. And as far as I'm concerned, the only seat at the table that Wayne LaPierre needs is one in which he's wearing a Hannibal Lecter mask. Because he's right about the same kind of person.
And where the NRA would come from, and I have reached out and spoken to them, and I intend to do an awful lot more. I want them engaged in this dialogue. These are good people.
A lot of us don't. No, they are not good people. Good people do not, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, decade after decade, advocate for the facilitation of slaughter of innocents. Any good people working at the NRA should by now have quit their jobs, begged public forgiveness, and gone on to try to find real, meaningful, non-lethal work.
And they need to be at the table. And bottom line is what we're asking is...
Why, Joe? Why? Why do they need to be at the table? We have decades of evidence for what their presence at the table will mean. The only reason they would be at the table, Joe Manchin, is to protect the arms manufacturers who don't care how many six-year-olds get slaughtered as long as their profits are acceptable. By the way, I was wrong. It wasn't on Joe. One Joe took the cue from the other. Joe Manchin appeared with another interviewer. And then Joe Scarborough declared that he, too, was a changed man after carrying water for the NRA for years and years and years. Oddly enough, in what Joe Scarborough said, however... He asked why it is that Hollywood movie makers can make violent movies and we don't do nothing about them. He mentioned firearms second. I don't care if you just answer the phone at the NRA. It's time to quit that job and move on. But do continue, Joe.
For all of us to come together and see a reasonable approach that we can take. And we're still protecting the Second Amendment rights. That's their concern, and my concern also. And again, they don't need to be villainized, nor should they be. They're going to be a strong participant. And they
Okay, do you notice how things evolve? Now they're not just going to be at the table. Now they're going to be a strong participant. This keeps getting worse.
Should be at the table, and I'm going to do everything I can to make sure they are.
Joe, I know you think you're somebody, but what makes you think you've got any say-so whatsoever on who sets the table? This is a dialogue that was called for last night by the President of the United States. You think he was just getting a little too uppity or something, Joe? Got a lot of nerve, don't you, Joe? Call us back when you've taken steps to protect the unborn children whose mothers are breathing poisons that your buddies let off into communities every day. Stop talking about the strong presence that the NRA is going to have, because the NRA has no place in a discussion about how we protect our children, because the NRA doesn't give a damn about our children. They've proven it with their concealed carry laws and their open carry laws and their stand and kill the brown kid with the Skittles laws. Those are not the people who need to be engaged in a discussion about how we protect our children from them. Would you invite rattlesnakes to a discussion of how to avoid being bitten by rattlesnakes, Joe? Jesus.
Well, Senator, we had a ban on assault weapons in this country. It expired in 2004. Yeah. Is it your expectation? Obviously, it's early days, but to the extent there is any momentum behind reinstating such a ban, do you think it has a realistic chance of passing the House and the Senate?
Carl, I would think that this is a reasonable approach to taking and looking at, you know, it was on for 10 years, looking statistically how it was able to protect the citizens of this country. Is it capable of being doing that again? And I believe it's a discussion And it's worth elevating it to that level to where all of us are looking at it. You know, we've never been in these waters before. We've had horrific crimes throughout our country.
What? I got to hear this again.
Approach to taking and looking at, you know, it was...
Back a little further, sorry.
Is it your expectation? Obviously, it's early days, but to the extent there is any momentum behind reinstating such a ban, do you think it has a realistic chance of passing the House and the Senate?
Carl, I would think that this is a reasonable approach to taking and looking at, you know, it was on for 10 years, looking statistically how it was able to protect the citizens of this country. Is it capable of being doing that again? And I believe it's a discussion.
Yeah, okay, so that's what I thought. There's only one problem with banning future sales of these weapons. It means that the millions upon millions of them that have been sold before the ban will continue to be in the motherlands of America's home. Now, Joe is a conservative Democrat. That means he's pretty much a Republican. We have a saying here in West Virginia, no Manchin has ever voted for a Democrat whose name wasn't Manchin. And so, you know, and remember, Joe's all worried about the fiscal cliff and whatnot. He's worried about the money. So, something that might provide real relief where these god-awful people-killing engines of death are concerned, like a buyback, a statutorily required buyback for fair market value, at which point the guns could, in my preference, be, melted into hubcaps. Or... no, let's stick with melted into hubcaps. Well, that ain't going to happen. Because we don't want to offend them lawful gun owners. And you'll notice if you see my Facebook or my tweets lately, lawful gun owner always has paren L, close paren, awful gun owners. Because we're going to continue to treat them like some sort of protected class. When they're just petty fantasists. The rest of us are living normal lives every day, but the lawful gun owners are out there stockpiling weapons for the zombie apocalypse. Sheesh. Sorry for the disappearance. But what was hailed as this big moment from a conservative NRA member, the donation taking whatever senator, turned out to be a bit anticlimactic, didn't it? Because I doubt there's any way under the sun that Joe would, for instance, support universal single-payer mental health care. Sorry, thanks for playing. And he's not going to support a buyback for all these millions of assault weapons. By the way, the next time some NRA goober apologist says, well, there's really no such thing as an assault rifle, just say shut the up. Well, they had pistols, too. You make my point.
And it's worth elevating it to that level to where all of us are looking at it. You know, we've never been in these waters before. We've had horrific crimes throughout our country, but never have we...
We've never been in these waters before. We've had horrific crimes, but... But what?
Seen so many of our babies... put in harm's way and their life taken from them, and the grief. And I mean, that's changed me, and it's changed most Americans, I would think. And with that, let's look at ways that...
Yeah, he lives in a bubble, doesn't he? There's lots of babies that have been put in harm's way, so to speak. But Joe just didn't notice, and therefore it didn't happen. But now, he's been compelled to notice. So now we're going to invite the NRA to tell the rest of us what we may do about protecting our children. From the NRA. And its affiliated monstrosities.
We can bring a common sense reasonability to this discussion and bringing all the adults to the table.
See, that right there is damage control. Common sense approach, that means an approach the NRA will be happy with. That means an approach that will not make the NRA stop writing checks to its pet senators, you know, like Joe, and its pet members of Congress. And realistically, I mean, come on, we don't have to go back and play Schoolhouse Rock and I'm Only a Bill, do we? Whatever Dianne Feinstein introduces, and it will probably be weak when it is introduced, ain't gonna pass the House. Is not going to pass the House of Representatives. Because the House of Representatives have long since abandoned reason. They're going to dig their heels in because House elections are not like state elections. And Senator Lockjaw, I mean Congressman Lockjaw from Pahatchie County, Texas, is not going to automatically get himself throwed out of his nice cushy congressman job by going along with something that'll keep children safe in Connecticut. Don't you remember the Republican official in Texas a couple of weeks back who said, I don't even want to be in the same country with Vermont? Don't you remember that? Sure you do.
And Senator, when thinking about a new potential ban, what could that look like? I'm asking because that federal ban that David had mentioned that expired in 2004, there are ways that manufacturers were able to get around that ban by just making small tweaks to the weapons, but essentially keeping them assault weapons for all intents and purposes. Yeah. What sorts of, specifics are you going to get into?
Well, I think we need to look at everything. I think Dianne Feinstein has had a bill. She said she's worked it, and she'll be bringing that bill to the floor. I'm anxious to sit and talk to her. I'm anxious to sit and talk to Senator Schumer. I'm anxious to sit and talk to...
He's anxious to sit and talk to a lot of people that have no reason whatsoever to talk to him. Because what has been made abundantly clear here is that he is the water carrier for the National Rifle Association. There should be an operative philosophy here. Anyone who tries to engage this discussion and speaks on behalf of the National Rifle Association is out. For once in this country, can we please make a decision about firearms without consulting the people who caused the problem in the first place? It has become readily apparent that Mother Lanza was getting some sort of end-of-the-world apocalypticism from somewhere. We don't know yet if she was a fundie. But you don't even have to go to church to be fed apocalypticism. You can tune in to, oh, I don't know, Alex Jones. And be told that it's all going to end day after tomorrow. The Mayan calendar people will tell you that we're on the way out, baby. You know, that's another thing that we do need to look at. And mercifully, thankfully, we as human beings are multitaskers. It's what, you know, we don't have the night vision of the big cats. We don't have the speed. We don't have the brute strength of some of our primate cousins. But we have these big brains, and it allows us to contemplate and work on several things at once. And we can do things like deal with firearms, deal with mental health, and look at the larger picture of how we got in this boat on this lake of gasoline in the first place. All right, wrap it up, Joe.
Senator Lieberman, to find out how we can collectively come together as Americans to protect our children. And that's really what this is about. And it's changed the level of discussions.
Senator, before we let you go, do you agree that this could potentially cost you politically? And does that matter to you at all at this point?
I don't think that, you know, if people start thinking about politics in this time, I mean, there's a time, I guess.
The time for thinking about politics in this was the night before when he was on the phone with his NRA buddies figuring out what to say. The guys at CNBC or whatever didn't see the vote tallies from the last election. He stomped his butt-crazy right-wing opponent, John Racey. I mean, he beat him like a barred mule. Okay. Joe has nothing to worry about here. So-called Democrats in this state love him. Heck, I know Joe. He's a likable guy. You can hear how genial he is. He is great fun to watch a Mountaineer football game with. I'm not telling you Joe's a bad person. I'm telling you that Joe has his priorities badly mixed up. And somebody out there once upon a time told him that being ambitious is the same thing as being bright, which it isn't. He's not going to pay a political price in this state at all. In fact, he's probably read the polling. Most American people support rational gun laws. And again, my apologies for all the troubles we've had with the stream. Hopefully they are sorted out now. Back to the mailbag. Darlene wrote in, what? In regard to the quote that Sandra sent. You know, the one about drilling it into young people that the correct thing to do is for everyone to instantly run at the guy with the gun. Yeah, Darlene says, what? Rush the shooter? Isn't that what the principal and school psychologist at Sandy Hook did? Yes, and they're as dead as doornails now. The only reason that crazed gunman, basically a kid himself, died was that he offed himself, putting a bullet into his own head. Despite all the heroism of the first responders, they didn't get there in time to rush him and take him out. Can you imagine if this kid just kept going with his shooting rampage? We don't have to imagine, because he had enough ammunition to go and do another school. And then this from Darlene, P.S. As my sister pointed out, actually the first responders were the principal and the school psychologist. Yeah. Maybe we need to redefine that term, too. This coming in from Sergi. I hear all this talk about subject line and often missed root of tragedies. I hear all this talk about how to prevent mass shootings in the future, with mention of gun control, better mental health programs, and the like. However, a very simple thing that contributes to such violent outbursts is simply disenfranchisement from society. When someone feels unloved, outcast, and overall worthless, they tend to lash out against the society that made them feel that way. If people just learn to do people right, befriend the lonely, and just show some damn love to all around them, we can lessen not only the mass shootings, but crime in general in the future. And there's truth in that. And that's why it is an ancient truth. Thank you, Sergi. The neighbors interviewed noted that Mother Lanza played in like a rotating neighborhood game, bridge, Yahtzee, I don't know. And whenever it came time for her to host the party, they just skipped her and went to the next turn. She always showed up, but if somebody knocked on her front door, she'd answer them at the side door and would not let anyone in her house. Yeah, really. She had a stockpile of weapons. She had a stockpile of food. I'm not nearly as worried about the stockpile of food because, well, you could make the argument that maybe she had brought that in the last few days after the storm hit. And anyone likely to be, you know, having a good supply of dry beans and rice and a few cases of bottled water, not a bad idea. I know from experience, twice in 4 months. But stockpiling weapons? And having taught one's at least somewhat mentally challenged 20-year-old son to shoot and to do it well? Yeah. And she told people how worried she was about how everything was falling apart. Now, I do not offer this next couple of facts as any sort of judgment. But it does, I mean, everything is part of it when you're trying to piece together why something like this happens. This was not a woman living in the projects. The house she lived in was huge, and some of us might think of it as a mansion. She was able to stay home because she was drawing something like at least $12,500 a month alimony from her ex-husband, who is the VP of Finance and Tax on Wall Street at GE Credit. I'm trying very hard to tamp down my cynicism, because it serves no real place in this, as far as I can tell. Asking questions about how upset this nation would be if the circumstances had been only slightly different, if the location had been slightly different. I'm not going to do that. I was deeply moved by the news that children in Pakistan had held a vigil for the families in Newtown, Connecticut. There is grieving the world over. And as far as I can tell, people the world over outside the United States asking why. The people of Australia went down this road some years back, and they eliminated these kinds of weapons, and they've not had another one of these horrors visit them. Breivik did what he did in Norway, but it was such an anomaly approach the unthinkable. Whereas in this country, the unthinkable has become commonplace. There were stories lost in the mad grief of what happened at Sandy Hook Elementary. At a hospital in Birmingham, Alabama, a man blazed it out, shooting at police and bystanders until he was taken down. Again, Clackamas, Oregon. And tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, as Shakespeare said, creeps each day in its petty pace. Perhaps I'm even being too cynical about Joe Manchin. I don't know. Michael writes in, he says, sounds like Senator Joe was sent out by the NRA simply to do damage control. That it's being reported as anything else or even the exact opposite is a startling fail by the media. I have no doubt that he was horrified. You would have to be a monster not to. But the problem lies in predetermining what outcomes should be. And when we start a process by saying that the NRA needs to be a strong player in the determination, well, that smells like failure to me. Because I'm tired. I'm tired of our children's, the way Joe Manchin said it, you know, we've had these things before, but not to our children. Really? Really, Joe? I mean, I was worried about being cynical. It doesn't get much more cynical than that. There was a 9-year-old in Tucson who didn't get to be a 10-year-old. There was a father-to-be in Aurora who lay in a hospital bed as his baby was being born. We've had these things before, but not to our children. As if somehow it was more acceptable before. This is what breeds that cynicism in me and makes me think that we're going to be hard-pressed to come up with a solution. You know, the kind of thing that Kate said a little bit ago. There is no way the gun laws are going to change. We will keep crying and wringing our hands. You know, I remember back during the Cold War, and many of you probably remember better than I because you were older than me at the time. But I remember how the right wing back then would squeal in fury at the notion that we might be suggesting disarmament as a solution to the worldwide threat brought on by our nuclear weapons cache? And ultimately, that is the question. Is there such a thing as disarming a little bit? There are so many lies and half-truths and misstatements and red herrings posed by the right wing and the lawful gun owners that it's almost impossible to get your head around all of them. But one of them is, well, when all the law-abiding people ain't got no guns no more, then the only people who'll have guns is the criminals, and we'll be defenseless before them. Except for the fact that, A, no one's talking about that, and B, that we can, look, here's I hesitate to offer solutions, but what do you say we clear all of our prisons out of the dope smokers and open up those beds for people who illegally possess firearms? You know, the so-called Saturday night specials that get your awful gun owners so worked up because they live in a perpetual state of fear. And let's say gun crimes get you life without parole. Or, and I know this will be deeply offensive to the right wing, why don't we ask civilized countries that don't have gun problems how they handled it? Because, again, it is another one of those lies that the right wing tells, that we're the only country that has guns. Lots of guns. There's lots of guns in Europe. But they deal with them very much differently. I mean, some of the most beautiful hunting rifles you will ever see are manufactured in Austria. What's the brand name? Steyr? S-T-E-Y-R? Classic English field shotguns are the benchmark of the business. The Belgians have Browning, and there is no finer. But as I said before, we can at least attempt to walk and chew gum at the same time. What happens when your mother Lanza, obsessed that the world is coming to an end and trying to deal with a child that you've pulled out of the school system to homeschool, and the homeschooling curriculum apparently includes trips to the shooting range? What do you do? And I don't ask that rhetorically because I don't know the answer. So maybe I've said as much as I have to say on this topic. And maybe I shouldn't have said anything at all. But you are by far the most important part of this conversation, and I encourage your participation. If you want to get involved in the process, if you want to offer up something for our consideration, then I invite you to join right in. You know the number, 304-658-3333. And light them up. Let's do talk about this. You can also get in via Skype. My handle here, Bob Kincaid Horn. B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. If you've never contacted me, send me a contact request and I'll act on it. I just okayed a couple of them. I can't even come up with any catchy music to play for this. Yeah, you're right, Marty. Joe Manchin said, but never our children. And Marty wrote in, what, there weren't any children at Columbine? Granted, they were teenagers, but I do believe they were considered children, weren't they? Yes, they were, but, well, I don't know. Maybe they didn't get around to really finessing that out in the meeting with the NRA. Marty also noted, isn't it interesting? A Sandy Hook happens and the world grieves with us. A Sandy Hook happens in Pakistan or Iraq or Gaza. If we notice at all, we merely shrug. What does this say about us? Yeah. Indeed. So, somehow or another, between the bufferings and the database crashes and stuff, I've filibustered for 2 hours, and for that, I deeply apologize. Let's go straight away to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Yes.
It's Darlene.
Oh, hi.
Hi. I'm nervous about calling in, so I'm just going to launch right into it.
Okay, don't be afraid of anything. We've never lost a caller yet.
Okay. I think the theory that you raise about, and I crack up every time you say Mother Lanza, I think it's an excellent theory as to what is going on with this woman. Because, you know, and they interviewed her, her sister. And I guess her sister lives out in Chicago. And this woman tried to justify the fact that she possessed these firearms as for her own protection. You know, because she was living alone, she had just gotten a divorce, and of course she has this home and she has to protect herself because, she's a woman who is living by herself. And I'm thinking, okay, now I've come from a long line of gun owners, hunters. My father, my brother, everyone, my father taught me safety with guns. He had me take a course. Now, I never carried it through. I don't own a gun. But he's always said to me, you know, Darlene, if all you need is like a small woman's sized handgun, that's enough to stop a person in their tracks. If somebody comes into your house and is an intruder, that's enough to do it. So I'm thinking, why would this woman have a Glock, a Bushmaster rifle, and this other one, a Sig Sauer? I'd never heard that's the first time I've ever heard of this particular brand of gun. And I'm thinking, there's something up with her. Something is going on with this woman, to be that fortified, with those you know, assault type military style weapons. And so I'm thinking, because you're right, she did homeschool him, and this kind of all brings, you know, her son, this all sort of brings it around to the whole, you know, evangelical or end of world kind of thinking that we see and we hear about. And
which she manifested. I mean, people have confirmed that, Darlene.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
she paid the price.
Well, but you know, I mean, I don't understand the need to stockpile weapons, but you know, why she couldn't have collected, I don't know, precious moments figurines instead of weapons, I don't know. But even that statement that was made to you, Darlene, you know, what you need is a nice woman-sized pistol.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a woman's size, you know, that doesn't mean that it's too tiny to fit in the hand of some big burly intruder and be used on you.
Right. No, that's true. Yeah.
And it does, and I've seen these. I mean, I used to have a bunch of guns. I got rid of them, okay? I got rid of them as my children got older.
Right.
Because I couldn't stand the thought of it.
Yeah.
It was terrifying to me.
Yeah.
I come,
There's no easy way to say it. My brother got his brains blown out when he was 16 years old in a handgun accident.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So, you know, it's real to me.
Yeah.
But you know, there's just a lot of, I mean, there are tons of unanswered questions, and I fear that they will remain unanswered. And I don't say fear because I've got some morbid curiosity. I say fear because we as a community, Darlene, and tell me if I'm overstepping anything here, we as a community need to look, you know, not that we want to rat out our neighbors or anything, but we need to recognize signs. And, for instance, the news reporting now from the neighbors says that, oh, yeah, she would go and, you know, that she would brag about her guns down at the corner tavern.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And
yeah, they also said that she would talk about how concerned she was about her son. And that I guess somehow my sister read this article to me because I was busy working, but she was looking through the various articles out there. But I guess she said that she thought, and I'm thinking there's a problem with this woman's judgment, because I guess she thought that by giving her son these guns, it would teach him responsibility. That's another that came out in the report, and I'm like, what?
And again, I'm trying to be really, really careful and not verge over into morbid fascination. But you know, this is a very well-to-do family.
Oh yeah, that house. Newtown is. I live in Connecticut, so I've been to Newtown. It is a beautiful area. It is a wealthy town. That house that they showed. I mean, that house has got to be at least $500,000, if not more.
Well, I mean,
development.
Yeah, I saw a flyover of it, and it looks like a mansion.
Oh, it's massive. Yeah, that is like. The kind of McMansion type of home that the well-to-do in the state of Connecticut have. I mean, that's considered like you've made it, you know. That is a very well-to-do area. I was very surprised when they were showing just the surrounding, because you couldn't see the house initially. They had, when the cops were initially crawling all over the place, they had blocked off that particular road, but you could see from the surrounding homes. I said, this is a really well-to-do development in that community. So, yeah, that house has got to be at least $500,000, if not more. And I'm thinking, what the hell is this woman doing? And, for a living, because, you know, and that's been answered, obviously, with the ex-husband. And I guess she was apparently a stockbroker herself. These initial reports that came out had her somehow involved with the school as a teacher. And I'm like, on a teacher's salary, she's going to afford a home like that? And oh no, she was involved as a, volunteered there. And then that was wrong. There were so many different
And you bring me to the question of what constitutes legitimate attempts at crime reconstruction. For instance, should the authorities be able to go into the divorce files and listen to the tapes of the divorce hearings?
Mm-hmm.
To find out if there were any clues, because again, this I don't say these things, Darlene, as a matter of morbid fascination. I say them as a question about how we go about the psychological and sociological business of trying to understand, you know, is there a pattern here? Were there red flags going up that weren't noticed? I mean, the story that this kid tried to go and buy a rifle of some sort, but was unwilling to tolerate Connecticut's 14-day waiting period. Should that not? I mean, should somebody back in the gun department at Cabela's or Walmart or whatever picked up the phone and go, you know, we got a kid here that didn't want to wait 14 days for a gun?
Right. Yeah, I would say they should be calling up and saying that. But
I mean, the minute should we have? And this is process, but the minute that we that somebody tries to buy a firearm, mm-hmm. should the first thing be, what is your name?
Sure.
Should that be written down first, whether you complete the purchase or not?
And where?
Where do you live? What's your name?
Yeah.
But remember, the NRA opposes waiting periods. The NRA opposes one gun a month laws.
Mm-hmm.
One gun a month. 12 guns a year.
But that's a dangerous imposition on the right to keep and bear arms.
Well, and apparently, and supposedly, Connecticut has been, they've said, you know, and I don't know how many myths and legends are coming out of this, has some of the most stringent laws in terms of buying and owning guns. And I'm wondering, well, as compared to whom? You know, as compared to what? Probably to other states, Texas, maybe West Virginia, maybe so. But even so, apparently, the whole idea or questioning the person that wants to buy or own a gun, whether or not they have mental health issues, my understanding is even on these so-called stringent Connecticut application processes, that all they have to answer is a yes or no.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Right. And there was, you know, I read something, and there's, forgive me, please, because there's been such an information deluge.
Incorrect information. There's a lot of misleading storylines in this.
But there was one factoid, I hate that word too, that I saw mentioned that I don't think was wrong, that Connecticut tried to do something, I don't remember the particulars, to strengthen its gun laws. And the NRA stepped in and stymied that about 2 years ago.
Hmm.
You know, meanwhile, just a couple of days before, and this kind of falls on the file it under karma, goddess of irony, whatever. A couple of days before, it became lawful in the state of Michigan to carry concealed weapons into schools.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, isn't that the NRA's response to everything? Arm the teachers. What are they going to start doing? Arming the 6- and 7-year-olds? That's their solution. It's like Newt Gingrich there, right? During the campaign, he wanted to arm the whole world. You know, if you want to get something different, you have to do something different, right? So going ahead and just filling everybody's hands up with more guns isn't going to change it. It's going to make it worse. But they don't see that. That's not what the NRA
right.
wants.
And some of that goes back to those yes or no questions you mentioned. One of those things on the form is, are you mentally ill? Nope. Okay.
So you can just lie.
Right.
And you're fine.
And only certain things go into the mental illness database if the database is even checked. And as Marty points out to me, the NRA's also weakened background checks themselves. So you know, that goes back to something I've said before. Before we allow a police officer or a member of the military to handle firearms, the training that they go through is pretty rigorous.
Oh, yeah.
And, in fact, you know, there are psychological profiles. I think Jim could probably speak to this better than I can. But you know, there are psychological profiles. Why should we allow someone who is less trained to handle firearms have less psychological examination? I mean, is it too... You know, it costs thousands of dollars to get a driver's license in Germany.
Well, you know, and
but here, you know, it all you got to do is muster up the price of the shooting iron, and it's yourn.
Exactly, and I mean, I was saying this to a family member today. I said, you know, I guess it's a felony if I have in my possession a feather of a bald eagle or a golden eagle. If say one flies over my house and drops a feather and I pick it up, that's a felony. You know, you can't do that. Yet you can go ahead and own a firearm. You know, I mean, I know that's a weird kind of, but I was thinking about that. You know, you can be arrested, you know, for having an ounce of pot in your pocket, you know?
Yeah.
But you can go ahead and you can own a gun illegally. You can be it's a felony to have the feather of a bald eagle in your possession. Okay?
Yeah.
But not, I mean, these kind of things are insane, and getting, you know, the mental illness issue, because I think there's multiple things going on here, but, you know, we have a deficit that we're struggling with here in Connecticut that, you know, we were blessed with, and I mean this, you know, I mean this facetiously, with far too many years of Republican governors in control, and left us with a $2+ billion deficit. Now, Governor Malloy is the first Democratic governor we've had in a while, and he was able to chip away at that. The goal was to completely eliminate it, but oh, guess what? You know, not enough revenue is coming in because of the economy being the way it is, and he was able to get rid of about, I would say about 3/4 of that $2 billion deficit. But now we're looking at about we still have a $500 million hole. And so at his discretion, he's been, you know, cutting programs, and on the chopping block is, guess what? programs for people with mental illnesses. So, you know, I'm curious to see what he's going to do now in response to this, because clearly he realizes there is a component, you know, that this kid was, you know, obviously screwed up. So what is he going to do there? And the correlations with, and I find this, and this hasn't been lost. I mean, you know, every photograph I see, everybody sees these, they were beautiful children. And every photograph, the name, every time you see it, it's like a kick in the gut, a kick in the gut. This has devastated the state. But I can't, the parallels with the military, with war, is just, you can't miss it, okay? Because these guns, obviously, that were used, are guns that they call military style weapons, or that can, you know, can kill many people all at once. When you think about war, you know, who are the, yeah, and you don't get the statistics, but who are the predominant, you know, people who the primary victims, okay, obviously are civilians. Within that, women and children. And in this shooting, who was it? All women and children.
Yes.
And ironically enough, even of the children, most of them were female children. So here we are with this, and I appreciate the fact that, you know, clearly President Obama was deeply moved by this and obviously very upset. But the cognitive dissonance in him, doesn't he realize that this is exactly what the United States is doing to children in Afghanistan, women and children in Afghanistan? What the United States, and again, he wasn't president, you know, for most of the Iraq war, a better part of it, what we did to children, women and children in Iraq, what we're allowing that prick, and I just can't think of any other word to call
that's
him.
That's okay,
prick,
that one.
Netanyahu in Israel, what we're allowing him to do to women and children, to Palestinian women in Gaza Strip. And, you know, this is what we're doing to them all the time. And does he think for one minute that any of those parents, any of those relatives or people in these other countries are any less devastated when they lose a precious child like that? Any less devastated than we are right now? For, you know, and again, the majority of these children, they were just all stunning, gorgeous. Majority were white, okay? And, it, you know, why are they, is because, you know, again, as you say, the brown people, that it's okay to do this to the brown people, that they don't seem to, and of course they're just as devastated. Doesn't he see that, that this is what we're doing, that it comes right back to us? I don't know. You know, I don't know.
Well, remember, in the aftermath of September 11th, 2001, Ward Churchill, an educator, an academic, an intellectual, did what intellectuals do and started examining, you know, big picture stuff. And he suggested that there was an element of September 11th, 2001 that was a matter of the chickens coming home to roost.
Yeah.
And he was hounded. His life was threatened. I think he was hounded out of his position at the University of Colorado, was it?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we have a clearly defined set of parameters about what we may and may not say in these circumstances. And, you know, in order to say something like chickens coming home to roost, you have to buy into something like karma.
Yeah.
That, you know, that a country is willing to do X must be willing to tolerate Y, just on the level of the spiritual plane. My personal thinking about Barack Obama is that he is not able to compartmentalize these things and think about his own children and say the children of Sandy Hook Elementary and not think about the drone war. I think he does.
I hope so.
But there is a, and this is excuse making, and I understand that, and I apologize if it offends anybody. A president is not a president in a vacuum, Darlene. A president is surrounded by people who shed blood for a living. They are called the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And he has a National Security Advisor and a Homeland Security Advisor and a CIA director and an FBI director and an entire cadre around him whose only purpose in life is to advise killing people who they determine by their own rules need killing. Does it strike you as the least bit ironic, because it does me, that we've got all those people devoted to all that killing at the highest levels of the executive branch, and yet we've only got one person whose job is designated as health and human welfare? You know, I remember when Dennis Kucinich was laughed at for suggesting we needed to start a cabinet-level Department of Peace.
Peace, yeah.
Suddenly, that doesn't seem like such a crazy notion. But, you know, if idiots like Brian Fisher and Mike Huckstaby and Tim Wildman and on and on and on can sit there and pontificate about the absence of prayer causing Satan to get a driver's license, then can we not, on our side, ask something much more rational? And that is that if we are to cherish our children, we owe a broader duty to cherish them all and try not to kill them with drone strikes?
Oh, yeah. But that's too sensible, I think, for what we're dealing with. In our, you know, in terms of the political so-called elite, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to explain this properly, but I, with Obama being surrounded by, you know, all these, I guess you could say, war hawks, I don't know if that keys into his own sort of psychological bent, or this that he has this heightened sense of responsibility for keeping Americans safe. You know, and his wife, Michelle, she kind of clued us into this even before he was elected for his first term, where she talked about their first child, it would be Malia, I think. Malia's the oldest. I always get the two mixed up, but I think it's Malia. She'd just given birth to Malia, and they released him from the hospital, and she and Malia were sitting in the back of the car, and Barack Obama was bringing them home in a snowstorm or an ice storm when they were still living in Chicago as young parents, you know, new parents. And she said that, you know, she looked at him and saw how intent her husband was on getting them home safely, and that she said she felt so incredibly safe that Barack was going to protect them. And if you listen to him and how he talks about, you know, that is a big deal with him, is keeping Americans safe. That's his first job, you know, because, I mean, if you recall the daggers in his eyes during some of the debates when he had to respond to the whole thing about how he did the apology tour. You know, they accused him of doing the Republicans accused him of doing this apology tour when he had his first foreign trip as president of the United States. And that seemed to really irk him. And it seems like he places keeping Americans safe on such, you know, is such a priority and on such a high level that it doesn't matter to what Machiavellian style, efforts that he uses to achieve that, the ends justifies the means. In other words, if it means, using drones or
the
Bush policies,
right? And that's an expanded perversion of the presidency that has grown since September 11th, 2001. And since it was declared by the neocons and the Republicans and George Bush, if you read the oath, the president's duty is to uphold the Constitution of the United States. There's nothing in the oath of office about protecting the American people. But that was added de facto. And it was added with a vengeance such that protecting the American people has become an element of presidential duty, even if it doesn't exist.
And what concerns me too is that, you know, is this going to happen when he made that address yesterday evening at the Interfaith memorial service in Newtown? You know, we have to do better. We have to protect our children. And I can't help but get worried, you know, because I'm thinking, is he going to go off in that direction again too? You know, is it going to be like not really looking at the issue here, which is the gun, you know, guns and gun control, but, you know, is it going to be the same type of Machiavellian direction, you know, where it's going to be like, are we going to wind up putting our kids in fortresses, you know, for school where they don't have windows they can look out of and things like that? Like, is it going to key into that heightened sense, you know, of protecting the American people and our children and kind of stopping at nothing to do it, where it's almost like, are we going to lose more rights? Are we going to lose? You know what? I'm worried about that because I'm not sure I trust. I'm not sure I trust the approach he may take, because, you know, the fact that they're throwing out the idea of bringing the NRA to the table is disgusting, because it's sort of...
Well, the sad thing is, Darlene, you know, as if Joe Manchin's at the table, the NRA is at the table. If any single member of the Republican majority in the House is at the table, the NRA is at the table.
Well, it's sort of like it's exactly what he did with the health care law. He brought the very groups that are causing the problem to the table, okay, and blew off the whole idea of single payer, right? So he brings the same, you know, the healthcare industry, big pharma, all of the individuals that are causing the problem, the groups, the corporations, all the ones that are causing the problem got brought to the table, and what did we get? You know, we got something, but it was really watered down, and it's still not really ultimately going to resolve our problem, okay? Because with the healthcare costs and everything else, it's getting us a step there, and I'm grateful for that little bit. But you know, this seems to be, they're sort of gearing up. It's going to be the same pattern in terms of bringing the wrong people to the table. And it's interesting to me, it almost seems like...
Well, I mean, I think what we're getting at, Darlene, is that there is a rather obvious answer here. And we've all got this sneaking suspicion that the rather obvious answer is going to be the answer that is not considered. And because the obvious answer is, you've got to get all of these things off the streets. Again, we can eliminate their sale tomorrow, but there will still be millions of these in the various and sundry Mother Lanza's gun closets. Okay, these things proliferated like mushrooms after a spring rain as soon as the assault weapons ban expired. I mean, there was an open push for it. Buy them now. You may not be able to buy them, you know, a week from now.
Well, yeah,
and so they're all over the place. There's no solution to this problem if it does not involve a buyback. And I'm sorry, we the people of the United States have just got to be willing to foot the bill for that. And I don't care how many right-wingers talk about mortgaging our children's future to China. You know, I'd rather mortgage our children's future to China than sell their future to an idiot with a Bushmaster.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, even with Feinstein and her bill that she wants to put through after January 1st, I mean, the bottom line is you're right. It is already weak out of the gates because it's not retroactive. She's already come right out and said it, and there's like over 900 exemptions I think in terms of the assault, the type of assault weapons, I got that. I don't know if I'm accurate on that, but I thought she said there's like 900 different exemptions to it. Did you hear anything like that?
Yeah, and I'm just like,
what the heck is this? And I think she knows. She knows it isn't going to get out of the house. I think she knows that.
No, but it'll make for great politics in 2014. Now, won't it?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of depressing.
We're being toyed with again.
but to that end, you know, it's kind of like what I said at the beginning.
Yeah.
I've said, you know, and Michael Moore said, you know, I've said all there is to say. I've said all I can say. You know, what I usually say in these instances is, don't worry, it'll happen again, mm-hmm. and again. And again, and again, and again, because this is the deal with the devil that we have made. I mean, to the extent that those right-wing idiots want to bring religion into it, this is, it has nothing to do with prayer in schools, but it does have to do with the deal with the devil. And every now and then, the butcher's bill is presented to us, and we're expected to simply sign, and we sign in the blood of six-year-olds.
Well, and even though I hate his guts because he's a major oligarch, the mayor of New York City, this guy's got the resources. Bloomberg is you know, he wants these guns off the street too. And he basically said on Meet the Press, which I never watch, but I was kind of trying to keep tabs on the local news with what's going on in Connecticut, that you know, that basically it sounds like he's willing to throw as much money as his own personal fortune into getting something done. So maybe there's something he's going to be able to do. I mean, I hate to look to him for anything.
Well, look where Mother Lanza came from. She's from New Hampshire. And, you know, anybody who lives in that region, I mean, you do, New Hampshire is the Alabama of New England.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go there for guns.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And she brought them. Apparently, all of those firearms were brought with her from New Hampshire. So, I mean, there are real-world solutions. Number one, in my book, can we please eliminate the swap meet sale of firearms?
Mm-hmm.
Can we eliminate the private sale of firearms? If you want to get rid of your firearms and sell them off, then you've got to go to some licensed dealer. And let them, you know, maybe you've got, if it'd be like around here, you'd have, you know, 30 to choose from. And let them tell you what your weapon's worth, and you get what, you know, you get. But you can't just go to the local gun show and sell it to the first wild-eyed apocalypticist who wanders down the aisle.
Well, he's going to be our senator soon, as Chris Murphy tried to pass, he has legislation, he tried to pass a bill, to close that loophole. The gun show loophole, I guess that's what you're referring to?
Well,
the gun show?
I don't call it a loophole, I call it a
truck through it.
Yeah, right. That ain't no loop.
It's the massive.
I mean, I remember, it stays with me because I remember the day that we were doing something, and we were over in the town nearby, and somebody said, "Well, there's a gun show at the Armory." You know, the gun show is always at the Armory around here. Makes sense, I guess. And Ferg said, "Oh, Dad, I want to go." So, Dad being Dad, we went, and we paid our $5 a piece to get in the door, and table after table after table of every kind of firearm you could have even begun to contemplate, and however much money you have in your pocket is however many guns you can buy. You know, no background check, nothing. Pleasure doing business with you. Thank you. And so, you know, we walked through, and Ferg was more fascinated with, like, the katanas, you know, the samurai swords and stuff.
Yeah, those are cool.
Yeah. Made me feel a little bit better. But then after we left, it turned out somebody got shot there. And irony of irony, the first thing you saw walking in the door is no firearms allowed inside, you know, no concealed carry, no open carry inside.
Yeah, isn't that ironic? It's just like, wasn't that just like at the Republican convention? They wouldn't allow.
Yeah. And remember, this is a real Looney Tunes state the NRA really never had to do any lobbying here. We just do this by ourselves. It was constitutionally established back in the 1980s that you have an absolute right to strap a firearm on or carry a loaded musket, if you want to, down Main Street here in any town, West Virginia. That is your right under the Constitution. So consequently, I have to get a little fish-eyed trying to buy a loaf of bread at the local Rippy Mart when some guy comes in with a 44 long-barreled 44 Magnum strapped on his hip and just hope he doesn't get pissed off at the price of jerky.
Yeah.
It's well.
So they don't need a permit to carry a concealed weapon.
No, now concealed, you've got to get a permit, and that involves going to the sheriff's office, filling out a form. And then they put a background check through the fax machine, and whenever it comes in, it goes into the garbage can, and you get your permit.
Well, I don't know. It almost seems as though the Second Amendment has trumped the First Amendment.
The Second Amendment has trumped all amendments.
You know, and I don't know about you, but I would think the framers put the First Amendment first for a reason.
Oddly enough, there is no rhyme. There's no rhyme or reason to it. I mean, there's actually historical evidence of that, but it does make sense that way. But you know, look at the way who was it? Brian Fisher interprets the First Amendment. He says that we just need some school principals to stand up for Jesus and say we're going to pray no matter what. And you know what? Like I said earlier, I would love to see that happen. I'd like to see a school principal come in, pass out prayer rugs to every student, and say, okay, yeah, it's 9, Mecca's that way, pray.
Mm. Oh, yeah, then. Yeah.
And then watch the American Family Association tie itself into a million tiny knots.
And, you know, the irony is that, I think we have four mosques here in Connecticut, in terms of the Muslim community, and immediately they sent in their condolences, and they made sure they sent it to all the major news the local news networks here in Connecticut, major for Connecticut, that they were heartbroken. They were represented at yesterday's memorial service. This gorgeous young boy saying that I don't know if you heard it or not, but he's saying this beautiful, I don't know what it was. It was just unbelievable. And that they had someone, and I have no idea what the proper terminology is, but they had someone from the Muslim community come up and say something and offer a prayer. And this young fellow was totally devastated. He was broken up and crying over this. They want so badly to be accepted, you know, as part of, the American community or part of the United States. And it's like, why do we brutalize them, you know?
Yeah.
They were so heartbroken over this. They were devastated. They were as devastated, you know, as the Christians that live in that community. It seems like a very diverse religious community. A lot of Jewish people that live in Newtown, and as well as Christians and all. I mean, I thought it was probably the most touching part of that service.
Yeah, when the ecumenical kind of right.
And I'm not religious, but it was all in.
Nor I. I saw some people out there on Facebook after the president's speech last night jumping down. They don't. And I've said this kind of thing myself. You know, they don't need prayers. They need concrete answers to horrifying questions. But and I'm sure I'll be accused of being an apologist for the president again. But, so be it. Last night's speech was a stylized. And stylized means something.
Mm-hmm.
Was a stylized response.
Mm-hmm.
And you say things that people that you think will be of maximum comfort to people. What last night was, I went and reread the text. And basically what last night was a civilian version of the Gettysburg Address. Right down to the "may we be worthy of their memories." That was that these dead shall have not died in vain, that this nation shall have a new birth of freedom.
I thought it was a good speech.
Well, it was.
And you know, they're getting on his case because he didn't mention the G-U-N word. Well, you know, look, you've got families in here, people that have lost the things most precious to them. Maybe it's just, like, not a good idea to say the word, you know, in that context right there. But we know kind of what he was alluding to, I would assume, you know. But I'm not sure that he... You know, I think it was a good decision not necessarily to say gun control at that point in time, you know.
Oh, no.
People were so... He said the names. When he said some names of one of the teachers, the teacher, the 27-year-old woman, you could hear the hysterical crying of this of somebody that was related to... her last name was Soto. She was like the kindergarten teacher. So I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah. But you're right. You're saying it was a stylized version of...
A stylized civilian version of the Gettysburg Address. And, you know, the hard work comes after the eulogies. The hard work of the stages of acceptance of death and grief. And
right. When all the cameras are gone and people are getting back to their lives and these families have to...
Right. I mean... I remember when the entire news media apparatus... descended upon Upper Big Branch because some corporate profiteers had let their urge for holy profit get ahead of workers' ability to go on being living human beings, and 29 men got incinerated. It was constant barrage of media, and then they left. But the grief didn't.
Right.
And, you know, Everybody has a degree of soul searching that needs to be done with this. And the media, by the way it responds to these horrors, needs to do so as well. Because sending every satellite news truck for 500 miles into a community like Newtown, Connecticut, or into a community like Whitesville, West Virginia, is a brutal added burden on a grieving community.
Oh, yes.
There's got to be a better way to do journalism than this. You know, telephone, you know, you don't always, and you know, look, somebody doing the stand-up, you know, make sure you get the school in the background, Sam. You know, that's not journalism. That's voyeurism.
Yes.
The media need to examine this. Morgan Freeman put out a statement saying that the media makes it more likely that the next one will happen because people understand the people whose broken brains do these kind of things understand that everybody will know their name when they're done.
Yes, and also they also now also know what the teachers do as part of the process of when they have their drills. They It's like it's all over the world now that teachers are required to put the children in the cloakroom, in the back room.
Yeah,
that's known now. So what do you think? Do you think that the next freak with an automatic rifle isn't going to check the cloakroom the next time? That's known now that is one of the hide in the cloakroom. And they it's all over the place that this is what these the young teacher, the 27-year-old teacher Soto, I guess she was able to get. And you got to figure that these teachers worked fast, considering very little time that they had.
They responded with a degree of professionalism that we would recognize as being superhuman if it were done by a member of the military.
Right, because she was able to get, she got 7 of her 13 kids into that cloakroom, apparently my understanding is. And my understanding is that, you know, after he shot the principal and the psychologist, he took immediate left and hit Miss Soto's class. She got 7 kids in the cloakroom and I guess was trying to get the other 6 and it wasn't in time and she came, and he shot her and the 6 children. but didn't go into that back room. That's why those seven kids survived, my understanding is.
Yeah.
Okay.
The one
yeah.
teacher who said, no, they're in the gym, and the killer blew her away and then kept moving. Hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting a correction from Texas Betsy. No, she got all of them in, but six tried to leave.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Darlene, it's been a magnificent conversation. I thank you very kindly. Feel free to chime in anytime, please.
Oh,
see how easily we got through it?
Yeah, it was okay. just one comment before I sign off. My hope is that people put pressure on the president that they call in and say, do not bring the NRA to the table. That's, you know, do something and just keep applying. Because I think that, you know, that's why we need to, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's
about it now. We have to be saying something before it gets down at, like you call it, the memory hole. Because people are angry. They're hot on this right now. And, you know, I've called the White House hot, you know.
Yeah, I was really proud of the people who went to the lobbying headquarters of the NRA today and gave them hell.
Yeah.
It was brave of them to do that. And I love that one sign. Teachers stand up to gunmen, but Congress won't stand up to the NRA.
Yep.
Well, you know, again, this is an organizing thing, Darlene.
It is.
People who want to see congressmen stand up to the NRA need to organize in their own communities back in the district.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Vote out of office.
Or, you know, just start telling them, start telling them now, if you don't stand up to the NRA, I won't stand up for you in 2 years or 4 years or six or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The momentum's there.
Exactly.
All right, Bob, thanks a bunch.
Have a wonderful evening, and thanks for everything, Darlene.
All right, thank you.
Bye now.
Bye now.
Calling from Connecticut, that is Darlene. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Bill, how are you?
Like everybody else.
Yeah, I know.
Except with me, it's one of my pet peeves with this whole country is the loss of the mental health system. And Bob, I have my first wife was a psych nurse, and at age 23, she was running two locked wards up here and doing a good job. She was really good at what she did. And what happened? This was the ideal deal between the right and the left. The Republicans were, it was, these hospitals were costing the states a fortune. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Because the people had no money. They were patients. In fact, two of my wife came home one day and, well, two of your friends are in. I said, what? She said, well, you know, one of my buddies who was an ace guitar player, well, he was also a Bible freak. And the Bible said you could chastise his wife, you know. Of course, it didn't say anything about a 2x4, I guess.
Hey.
Another friend of mine was there because he fell asleep on the side of the road between Cleveland and Detroit with a crap load of Reds on his way to sell up in Detroit. So that's how he beat it, too, by going in. But anyway, we had a bunch of hospitals here, like every other major city. One of them was so old, it looked like one of those gothic, scary places, you know. So the Republicans were, oh, yeah, it was costing so much money, they wanted to put an end to it. And the folks on the left said that these people have been in there for too long, which is probably true. But there was a third leg to this. Which was to set up daycare centers and places where people could go, you know, because some of these guys, they were dumping them all over University Circle. And I was working there. I was playing there. I mean, I worked 25 years in UC playing and hanging around. And I knew a lot of these guys on site, and they'd spend the first part of their lousy check buying stuff, and then the second half trying to sell the stuff so they could keep eating. So the third part of this system was not there, you know. They never completed the job. So now they take people in for 5 or 6 days and throw pills at them and throw them back on the street. And that is not effective at all.
No, it's not, Bill. And remember that that all happened under, and that's the way some of these things are so slippery. It was under the guise of being humane that during the Reagan administration we started shutting down mental hospitals.
Yeah.
And a lot of those mental hospitals were themselves sort of gothic scenes of horror. I know that a couple of them here in West Virginia certainly were, but we've got to, I keep coming back to it. We've got to walk and chew gum at the same time. This is a time to start talking about universal single payer mental health care.
Yep. It's just part of that hospital system that we just had, squeezed at us. It amounts to not much, but it amounts to more than we have now. But, what were the two movies? There was a female lead movie in the 40s, which I just caught a little of not too long ago. And, of course, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was the other well-known Snake Pit, I believe was the name of the movie from the 40s that was gave you a bird's-eye view of the what was hospitals were like in those days. And, of course, I got a good look at it through the woman I was in love with at the time. And she finally had to get out of it and go deliver babies instead. It was just too miserable. And the NRA, man, that is a tough fight when you're fighting with people who have that kind of money and that kind of support from the... I mean, you can't...
Your average NRA politician is a good one because he gets bought and stays bought.
Yep. That's the old James Road quote. Our governor, she's supposed to have used that quote. That was a good politician. Once they were bought, they stayed bought.
Yep. Yeah,
that's so true. And what were you saying last week? The Bible says it. I accept
No. God said it. I believe it. That settles it.
Yeah, that's the whole big problem with these folks. And, Bob, I was a gun carrier, but luckily for me, I never had to plug anybody. When you're a musician, you're working the crazy hours. You're working rooms full of drunks. And I was working some pretty rough places. And what was the line from the guys from the band, the Big Pink Band, about... or was it when they were working with Ronnie Hawkins? They said the places were so tough you had to puke twice and show a razor before they let you in. I believe that was a Levon Helm quote from when he was working with Hawkins.
It sounds about right.
And, you know, it's true. I mean, these places were just... You never knew what you were going to find when you left. And somebody tried getting into my joint in a neighborhood. Next thing I did was go out and buy and hardwire an alarm system because I didn't want my dogs raising all kind of hell and me being... not realizing what they were barking at, you know? So in other words, I think there's a time for self-defense, but it's very rare that you get a chance to really defend yourself.
Most shootings take place within the distance of 3 feet, less than 3 feet, point-blank range. Most of them involve the discharge of no more than two rounds.
Yep.
And seldom, if ever, is it necessary that one have a bushmaster. But no, you got to understand, Bill, how the bushmaster is marketed. Beth just posted on my Facebook page an ad for the bushmaster, and the bushmaster was advertised with the advertising slogan, "Consider your man card reissued."
Oh, man. Yeah, see, I used to argue with friends of mine who were collectors, and I can hit a guy two blocks away, and I used to say, well, what are you going to tell the judge? why do you shoot at a man two blocks away? I used to get the 2-inch .38s and, you know, and I had a shotgun for the house, but that was a, hell, that was a, I had the kind of cop's head.
Right, but we have to, you know, one, there's the marketing angle. That's a, see, what we're finding out here, since we're willing to talk about it, is there's lots of different conversations we need to be having, Bill.
Yeah.
There's the marketing conversation, the mental health conversation, the sorts of firearms conversations, the firearms at all conversation.
Yeah, well, I believe the Second Amendment is way overplayed.
Well,
way overplayed.
And it's and again, it's been overmarketed because the fact of the matter is, these guys are still the real catch 'em with a net types are out there, and they've got this mindset that says that the aliens or the zombies or whatever are coming, and you know they're going to be all gunned up for it. I got a story here. You know, we tend to think that the NRA is the craziest of the crazy, but they're not. There's another gun group called Gun Owners of America that's run by this real Lulu named Larry Pratt. Okay, now, for some reason, and let's have a media conversation too, Larry Pratt was invited onto Chris Matthews' program. Now, the only reason you invite Larry Pratt onto Chris Matthews is for the controversy he will bring. Not because Larry Pratt has nothing substantive to offer to the conversation. And so Chris says, you're like Sharon Angle out in Nevada who said we need our Second Amendment rights to control when our politicians get out of hand. And Pratt said, that's our Second Amendment rights. She's not making that up. So Matthew says, so how would you use your Second Amendment rights if you didn't like the way your congressman or senator is representing you? By being prepared. So, Larry, it's not just the right to use guns to protect your homes. It's the right to take on your government. The government has been overboard. But the thing is, Larry Pratt's a freaking coward, just like about 99% of them.
Well, they made a new version of that Red Dawn kind of movie.
Wolverines! Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good. You guys are going to stand up against an army? I don't think so. I don't believe this is not 1776.
No, the only people most of these gun goobers will stand up against is a kid in a hoodie with a can of tea and a bag of Skittles and gun.
Yeah. Somebody who's, I had a situation, I was coming back from a third shift job at 3 a.m. and I'm getting some dog food and cat food out of my van and you bend down and I could look. And there's 4 or 5 guys standing behind me. It must have been the all-night construction crew. They had hammers and monkey wrenches. I imagine what they were with the local... these kids were Caucasian, so don't get me wrong that there's a bigotry here. They were probably selling crack. Because the one thing about it, it's an equal opportunity employer, you know, to sell the crap.
Yeah.
And to buy it.
But you're here to, but you live to tell the tale.
Well, yeah, because I had a pistol in my hand when I turned around, and the guy said, we're righteous. And I said, I'd like you to stay that way. And that was that. I had no problems with them because they were basically probably just trying to sell.
Yeah.
I don't know, but the weaponry was because somebody else might know that they were selling and try to take it. I mean, that's so insane that most people don't.
So, those were self defense hammers, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, Bill, I got to get out of here because we're out of time. But good hearing from you, my friend.
Hey, you hang in there. And by the way, a quick congratulations to Renee and Albert.
Oh, thank you, Bill. Thank you. I'm sure
the family, man.
Absolutely.
All right, you hang in there, bud.
Will do. Bye now.
Bye bye.
Thanks, everybody. Got to get out of here. Back tomorrow night. Thanks for helping us meet Randy's challenge for the evening. It is much appreciated. And, still lots more to talk about. There's always more to talk about tomorrow. Thanks to everybody who makes all this go. And thanks, of course. Rick Smith is next.